if I create the kind of paintings that currently I'm imagining would be really fun to create, would be really like selfishly exciting, me, fuck it, I don't care, this is how I want to work, this is what I want to create. What if they're really, really, really bad? Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Art Juice. This is honest, generous and humorous conversations that will feed your creative soul and get you thinking with me, Alice Sheridan.
And me, Louise Fletcher.
We've got an admission. I've got an admission. Actually, we both have. We both started show notes with different topics on our shared high-tech Google folder, which is how we discuss these things, and we both wrote individually on show notes, and then we've turned up and we've decided we're not really sure what it is we're going to talk about today. So it might be a little bit rambling, but we're going to go with it anyway. Really, with the idea of the whole podcast was supposed to be about turning up, sharing with you what we were doing in order to progress things in our art and progress things within our artist life. And I don't know, maybe over the last year, it's become a little bit, what's the topic, rather than just turning up and how's this week been? So we're going to go a bit freeform this week. You're welcome.
Turn off now, if that doesn't sound appealing.
Okay. So tell me then about you. See, I'm feeling better already.
Oh, good. See, it's me. It's my magic powers. Well, today, I'll tell you something. I woke up today and I thought, oh, I have to do that. I have to do that. I have to do that. And I know I have to do something this evening. What's that? Oh, no, it's this afternoon. I'm doing the podcast with Alice. Oh, good. All right. That's not a draggy thing. It was like a feeling of, oh, that's all it is. Okay. Because that's just a chat, isn't it? That's just...
Yeah,
nice.
And I think we're just thrown because we're doing it on the wrong day this week, because tomorrow I'm going to be traveling to go off and hang real art in a real place, in a real event with real people maybe coming. And apparently real people are coming. We've got people booked in on time slots and things. So that's fun. Not that I'm desperate to get out at all. In fact, I'm so desperate that Amy's actually going to come with me. She wants to come too. She's going to come and be a helper. So that's kind of what my week has been about. My week has been getting things ready for that, which I have to say this time doesn't feel nearly so pressured. I've only had, let's think, 6 new paintings that were just at the stage where they were ready to be getting finished. So it's not like I've had this big planned out series of work that has culminated in a thing. They've just all been at the stage where, right, you guys, you're ready to arrive at the same time. And I knew this event was coming and I thought, right, well, I'll show those for that. Some of the bigger pieces are older work though. So I haven't had, when I say older work, I mean, early this summer, you know, it's like more than finished last week, isn't it? So it's felt easier. I've had a little bit of emergency artwork to do in terms of digital artwork, in terms of getting a print ready, because the painting that has been used on the publicity, the original sold. So I've got a print ready for it. So that's been quite nice, you know, feeling a little bit of energy around turning something around quite quickly.
It looks like an exciting event too, because I've been following it on Instagram from... whose place actually is it? I've forgotten again.
It's Jane Johansson, J-O-H-A-N, 2 S's.
Just the lovely horse paintings. But she has this thing, doesn't she? Cowshed Collective, and that's where she's showing as part of this trail. And there's some really lovely artists showing there. There was, now I don't know who it is, so we might have to edit this bit out, because there was a landscape painter whose work she posted on Instagram, like a representational person. But yeah. It was stunning, absolutely beautiful. And it looks like it's going to be a really good event. So
yeah, I think it's the third or fourth year that she's done it. So when she first did it, maybe she was just starting painting herself, but she's obviously got this venue that is, you know, it is a cow shed. And one end of it she uses as a studio for her work, and just thought that it would be a good location to kind of curate an exhibition. And this is the second year, I think, that she's really shown her work. But obviously she really enjoys getting together and balancing out this mix of art and sculpture and jewelry and people who make bags and outside sculpture. And I think it's going to be really good fun. But it just shows you, though, which is kind of what we're going to talk about ish, maybe. What I really like about that is that's the part of it that she enjoys. Like, she likes, obviously, she enjoys making her own work. But at the beginning, she wasn't confident enough because she was new to it to say, here's me with my art at this event. But doing this with other people and around other people's work has created this space that she's now ready to step into with her own work. And I just, that thing of following your own personal nudges and where that takes you, that's really, really nice. So it's going to be exciting. It's going to, you know, it's going to be what it's going to be, but I hope it's going to be fun, whatever. But yeah, all sorts of people. So if you want to see who is going, have a look at the Cowshed Collective on Instagram. And the weekend starts this weekend, but when you hear this, it will be ongoing until the 20th of September. So in Sussex, in England. So yeah, that's me. That's what I've been doing. I'm not organized yet. Haven't even done my labels yet, but I will be. Because you always are when you have to be.
Exactly. And it sounds really good fun. Well, good luck.
What have you been working on?
Well, I'm feeling a bit in transition. I'm just beginning to feel in transition. So this week has been mad. The week we're in and last week, just honestly so busy. You know, when you just can't keep it all in your head and you even stop writing it down because it's just too much to write it all down. It's like,
isn't that funny when you have the busiest week and you don't even bother on a to-do list because it's just like,
I'll just do what comes up and try. So it's the second to last week that I'm in now of my 10-week course, which I've had so much work put into it, but which, as I said, halfway through I decided to change the ending to accommodate the group I had, which felt more advanced than I thought it was going to be. And so changed all the content, and I'm just finishing up recording all of the last week's lessons and content. And I feel a bit in this transition period where I'm also, the Ted Hughes series is finally beginning to kind of gel and come together, and I'm finally beginning to get paintings to, I never like finishing just one, so I get them to like 95% and then put them aside, because otherwise if I finish just one and then come back 6 months later, I'll feel like it doesn't fit in. So I've got quite a few now to 95%, and I really felt for a long time like I wasn't going to get there with any of them. So because I'm in this transition time, when the course ends, so mid-September, I want to be fully engaged with painting, and I want to be in here for a good amount of time on most days. And I'm just really excited about it. And ideas are coming, but I'm planning for next week to have an actual review. I'm going to have a board meeting with myself.
Good idea.
I'm going to get everything out, all the pieces on paper that I started, my sketchbooks, my notes, my photographs, and the work I'm doing now, and just have a real serious review of everything, where I am and what I want to do with it. And I hope that won't scare me into just stopping. I hope that'll actually spur me, all that thinking. That'll be a whole day of thinking. But I'm excited. I'm feeling really good about having some time now to just focus on painting, even though I love the teaching. I really do. It takes up all of the time.
It does.
You've got to be prepared to give up what else you do for that period of time if you're going to do it properly. And if you don't do it properly, people will come back the next time. So I'm just excited about, it's like transition time. So you always talk about back to school, and I always don't feel like any back to school because I don't have kids and nothing really changes.
Oh, come on. September is in your bones with like new pencil cases, and isn't it? Is it not?
No,
still is.
School was a dread for me. So any thought of going back to school after primary school, it was just a dread, a horrible cold dread. So no, it isn't, but it is this year. I'm finally feeling this year, like, okay, I'm in the swing of a new season coming up, and I'm going to be painting. So I'm excited about that.
I love your phrase, have a board meeting with yourself.
That's you my corporate background.
Yeah, yeah, which is, isn't that, is, but it's lovely, isn't it? Because that, I was kind of like, oh yeah, I really like that. But that's what I do. And that's what I did a little bit of this morning, because I've just been, although I've had this event to prepare for, I've been feeling scattered. Like, we've had various family things that are scattered, and like my daughter's starting school and it hasn't happened yet. So again, this sense of just limbo, it's just weird. And I thought, how much of this is actually really true? So I kind of divide my year into seasons. I have a spring, summer and autumn, and no winter because I don't really like winter. So spring basically based around terms, because that's how it always worked for me. So we're now starting this new season, and one of the things I do is I go back through my planner that I did at the beginning of the year. And of course, at the beginning of the year, we start things with great intentions and we feel good and we're optimistic and it's all going to work, la 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 la. And then you get halfway through the year and, you know, you realize maybe you were a little bit over optimistic. But what is fascinating is how many things that I wrote as kind of pie in the sky ideas at the beginning of the year have actually happened, albeit in a slightly different way. So for example, one of the things that I wrote was show work in a fun and unusual location. In January, I had no idea that Jane was going to approach me and ask to show in the cow shed. There it is. It's just turned up. So it was quite reassuring to realize that there were all these projects that I'd sown the seed of in January that I felt, or I was feeling, nothing's happened. The middle of this whole chunk since March has kind of been a weird write-off in many ways. And, you know, I know that I'm not alone in feeling this unsettledness all the way through. But actually, when you sit down and look at it, certain things have made sense. Certain things have come out maybe better than I was actually seeing them as being. And it does give me a little bit more optimism about the rest of the year and a little bit more focus. There are some big things that I wanted to do that I have decided quite happily to ditch. So that's kind of what I wanted to talk about a little bit today, about how we, maybe about how we readjust for those things. Because I think we have to.
One of my big goals this year, when I was to submit to higher level shows than I've submitted to before, and I only got to do that, I did that in one, and it worked out well. But then they're all gone, or they're all online only, and I just don't feel like putting in things that I actually are all part of a series. And that's the other thing. Even the online ones, they're all part of a series that I might have other plans for, even if I can't know what they are yet. I really don't want to submit one or two to the Society of Women Artists, saying it be an online show, and then I might want them all to be together.
So, and have it held up for 6 months, because they want them till the end of December, don't they? So it's, you've got them locked in then.
Yeah, so I've kind of adjusted that. That was what I wanted. And like you say, I've just ditched that, partly the pandemic. I think me having my course and deciding to go ahead with it, in a weird way, made the pandemic not as unsettling as it would have been, because I was so busy just getting that done.
Hang on a minute. You just snuck that in there. Your course and deciding to go ahead with it, I don't remember. It might just being me, forgetful brain. At one point, did you consider not going ahead with it?
There was a time where I was thinking, is anyone going to spend money in this situation? Particularly like in March, April. I thought, first, I had two things. Should I not go ahead with it? Because no one's going to want to do it. And I might not have the energy mentally. Or should I push it forward? I remember saying that to you. Should I do it now? Like when people really need it, when they're at home, like in April. And I ended up deciding to stick with my original plan and just do it when I said I was going to do it. So I don't know if it wasn't like I seriously considered it and had a wobble, but because I did go ahead with it, it gave me so much to do all through that period first the marketing and the planning and the content creation, which I'm ending up redoing anyway because I changed my mind, and then doing the course and then changing the content, that I haven't had time to be unsettled or really all that anything about. It hasn't felt any different to me.
Cause yeah, not so much has changed for you, has it?
However, now I'm finding, so we're over that patch now. I'm beginning to have more time. And a lot of the, you know, people around here, their kids are going back to school.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm starting to find out that I'm not becoming agoraphobic because I go out all the time to do things I have to do. I am becoming a bit like super paranoid. And I'm thinking, when your kid goes back to school, do I want you anywhere near me? Like, do I want to walk down the road past you? Do I want to go in a shop when everybody's kids are back at school and lockdown's basically over and infection rates are going to rise and that's just what's going to happen? I can't see any way that's not going to happen. And so I've realized the course and all that busyness kind of stopped me thinking about the fact that because I couldn't go anywhere, at first we couldn't, and then because I was too busy to, but now I could. And now I'm like, oh.
You know what you need? You need another trip to London.
No.
I know that you're going to be like, are you mad? I'm going to do that.
Only in the car. I would drive on my own, not getting on public transport with other people.
I'm going to.
Breathing their germs on me. Now, you have to remember, I'm 10 years older than you. I'm like 2 years out of the risk category. Age-wise, so it is a bit different, but I am surprised because at the beginning of this we both went why is all everyone fussing before lockdown. If you remember, I came to your house and I said, oh, I just saw a man in a mask in the subway, ha ha ha, you know, how paranoid. And now I'm the one going, right, stay over there, don't get too close because I don't want children's germs on me. And it's a bit of a problem.
Do you know why though? It's because normally we make decisions on things, or we react to things according to either our experience of it or information that we've had and we trust from others. And in this case, I don't think we have either. Your experience of it is you locking down with you at home, which to be honest is not that different from normal.
Yeah.
I personally, in terms of personal contacts, I know two people who've had it, a mother and a daughter. They both tested positive. One had very mild symptoms. The other didn't have any symptoms at all. They were living in a house with a family of four. Only two of them got it. So this massive high transmission, like,
I know somebody who took my course, her and her husband had it and he died.
Yeah. So this is the thing, is that everybody's individual experiences of it was really, really different. Also the way that it's been reported and fact-wise, I just think we have this sense of we still don't really know what's going on. I mean, three people in the UK died yesterday. Three people.
Yeah, I think nobody knows, because I think I've read things saying, you know, it's increasing in transmission around the world, but as of yet, it's not seeming to kill as many people.
Yeah.
They don't know why. Like, is it weakening? Has treatment got better? Like, they don't know why. Is it mask wearing, which is meaning that less of the disease is being transmitted to people, so they're not getting
it? Yeah, so it's smaller amounts you're getting. But this is the thing, is that nobody knows. And this is part of this scattered feeling, is that, like, on one hand, I think, this is really serious. Everybody, of course, we have to take it seriously. And on the other hand, I think, are we even being, I don't know, what, like, even if I look at the figures that they're telling me, if three people died yesterday and it's based on maybe who was infected, who was getting it a month ago, that's three out of, around a month ago, it was about 700-800 new cases a day in the UK. So that's half a percentage of people dying from it, whereas if you look up mortality rates from influenza, not influenza, pneumonia, 20%.
Yeah, and so this is very true. However, there's a couple of things about that. So I do know quite a few people who have had it, got better, except and not
still ill. Yeah.
Really ill still. And long-term damage to lungs and heart. And I don't think we know that yet. And so there's that side of it. But there's also not many people get pneumonia every year. And you usually only get it if your system's completely worn down for some. So it's not really the same thing. The people who get pneumonia, like Phil's dad before he died, he was always getting pneumonia because he was so weak that you get pneumonia if you're really seriously ill already. Whereas this is, but I think the main worry they have about it is if it turns out that only three people a week die, obviously it's not a problem for the healthcare systems around the world. But I think the worry is if it comes back with a vengeance, then the healthcare systems get overwhelmed and then you don't get your treatments for cancer and heart disease and all the other things and you die of something else. So there's all that. Anyway, we're getting into ours, aren't we? I'm definitely not on the side of people are keeping things from us and there's some big weird thing going on.
No, I just think people just don't know. People just don't know. And that's what's unsettling, I think,
for
us to deal with, you know, in when it comes to personal and work and all sorts. It's like impossible to plan. And it's just, it's difficult. It's difficult. It's difficult emotionally. It's difficult business-wise.
Plus there's all the extra emotion that, for example, for you, for families, for people who've had, there's people who've had, for example, spouses all of a sudden at home who were not at home, and that's difficult. Or who've had kids at home, or who've had both, like you've had, all of a sudden everyone's routine's different. And the kids, I imagine, it's really difficult for them.
Really hard.
You know, most people say their kids are doing the best, are coping as best they can and trying to do the best. But it's difficult. Kids need social life and they need their friends. And so that's really stressful.
I was even thinking this week, I was watching somebody with a toddler. And I was thinking, how do you even do life skills with a toddler at that age where one of the key things you're teaching them, I remember having these conversations with my kids about sharing. Oh no, that's so-and-so's toy. Give the toy to so-and-so. Here, we're going to take it in turns, pass it, you know, and I don't know, maybe they've just realized in small children that that just doesn't matter. And all of that is going ahead anyway, but you just think there is so much. And then when my brain starts thinking about all of that kind of stuff, you just like mini explosions. And I can't function anymore. Anyway, it's not really about that though. It's about what we do. There's a certain amount of acknowledging it, but there's also the reality is we're all still here. We're all still functioning. We've all still got to do something although my daughter said to me, all I want to do is sit on the sofa and watch TV and cry. I was like, yeah, I get it. Get it, I'm with you.
Oh gosh, and she's so young. Don't do that, Amy. So much life to live.
Then later that day she decided and she learned how to make Florentine. So now I'm having a very happy time basically keeping going on coffee and very sweet Florentines because the two are a very good mix. But we've got 40 to eat. So anyway, so but the thing is, how do we keep going through all of this? And one of the things that when I did my little review and I'm looking at the time ahead is about giving yourself time and space to adapt. And one of the things, I bought a newspaper at the weekend, and normally I don't do that because buying the newspapers is just depressing. Like, makes me rant. It makes me cross. Full of upsetting news. Anyway, I bought the Observer on Sunday, which I don't think we normally buy, and I really enjoyed it. I almost, you know, I read all the sections cover to cover, really enjoyed not only having the time to read it, but it just threw up so many interesting ideas. So just to give you, like, there's an article on people who build crazy mad things in their basements, like entire replica villages or duplicate Disneylands. There was a Q&A with Sandy Toksvig, who started the Women's Equality Party and is a just brilliant comedian who's got a new book out. What else was in there? There's a book by Alistair Campbell that's come out about his depression that just sounds really good reading, sound advice. There's an article on Annie Nightingale. You know who Annie Nightingale is?
I certainly do. Phil was talking about her the other day. She's still on the radio.
I couldn't believe it, because so for anybody who doesn't know, she's basically a late night Radio 1 DJ. She's got quite a husky voice. She's always done the sort of going out, slight clubbing-y type music. She's 80.
I know. I was shocked. I never knew she was that much older than me when I was listening to her on the radio.
Exactly. I mean, I knew she was older because she just sounded like a million times more sophisticated, but so impressive. So she said, and I just love this. It's a bit like we spoke about Jermaine Greer a few weeks ago. She said, so she's talking about a playlist that she's putting on radio. And she says, she needs to issue a warning. There might be some adult themes in this show. So if you think you might be offended, you can find another, I'm sure. I love it. And she was Radio 1's first female.
Yeah, I remember.
Paul McCartney, everybody else. She says, at the time, DJs were viewed as husband substitutes for bored housewives. And she's just had the most fantastic, I mean, I wrote down a fantastic career to look back on, but it's not about looking back. It's this, she's determined to keep doing so as her 80s press on. She doesn't remotely care about people who are confused by her either. I'd say to them, would you say to David Attenborough that he shouldn't be doing wildlife films anymore? His expertise and knowledge are turned up to 11, and so are mine, she laughs, although I must admit I'm a bit of a freak. More than anything, she says, she wants to know what's coming next. I always have, I always will. I want to know where we're going to go. So I finished reading the newspaper, A, with a massive, great, big, long list of books I want to order and read. And having done something that I feel like I haven't had the capacity to enjoy a lot recently. And it's made me think about going forward in the next few months between now and Christmas. That's what I want to do. Am I going to have to revisit my plans? Yeah. But I want to have more space for that too.
Yeah. I love, it's just brought up something I thought the other day. So I was driving home, and every now and then I have a little pity party for myself where I think about, it's like, would you like some wine with that cheese? Where I think about, or some cheese with that wine rather. Yeah. I think about like, oh, I'm 57 now. And if I'd started doing this when I was 35, you know, I could be so far along and I would have had so much more energy to do everything I want to do. And then I suddenly had this thought, which is so obvious, but it just came to me. This is the youngest you're ever going to be. I was like,
today,
because I was looking back at something, some old family videos, and there's this video my dad shot of me when I was 25 and I'd come back from Canada to see my parents. And so he shot this video of me while I was talking to my mom and I didn't know. I was so young. Yeah. And I was like, oh, look at you, Louise. You're so pretty and you're so young and you're so slim. And that got me depressed. So on the drive home, I was like, you're just old now and you don't have that energy and you don't look like that anymore. And then I was like, yeah, literally, this is the youngest you're ever going to be. And when you're 75, if you're lucky enough to be 75, you're going to look back and think, oh, look at you then. You were so young. And can you just enjoy? Can you stop thinking, oh, if only, if only, if only, and just enjoy now?
Yeah.
And actually,
why is it so hard to do? Why is it so hard to do?
No,
Are we just making it harder than it needs to be?
It seems to be hard for me because I'm either there looking back, oh, woe is me, look at all the time that's gone by. There's not much left. Because then I start thinking, well, there's not much left. That's what my mum's like every time I see her. She's like, imagine what it's like to feel like me when I'm 79. I'm looking ahead. Oh, when I do that thing, yeah. I'll tell you about that in What's Inspired. I'm thinking about what would that be like? What if I did that? Instead of, what about now? And I know we all do it. I know we all do it because that's why there's books and podcasts and gurus up the yin yang telling you not to do it. But how do you not do it? How do you enjoy today when I'm in this lovely space that I had built just for me and that has everything in it I could want, and I'm about to get to some painting time, and why am I sitting there thinking, oh, if only you'd done it differently or younger or sooner or whatever?
Well, isn't that, I think things like that is what meditation is supposed to help with, isn't it? About like stopping those thoughts.
And how the hell do you do that?
I don't know. But I think you all find your own way. So like one of the things in this Alistair Campbell book about dealing with his depression, he says he wakes up every day. Wait for my view on this. He wakes up every day and he gives himself a score on where he is on the depressed scale. I can't remember which way round it is, but where one is brilliant and 10 is suicidal. And he says his rule is that he never lets himself be a 1 or a 10. And my immediate thought on reading that was, why would that be the first thing you would focus on when you wake up? And I understand it because it's a self-preservation thing, but I wouldn't want that the first thing you do then is turning your focus onto a potentially negative thing that you've got to manage. Whereas like I much rather I wake up and I think, what have I got that's good that I've got to look forward to today? And then I think, what are the other things that I need to do today? And sometimes they happen and sometimes they don't. If they're essential, they do. If they're not essential, sometimes they get shifted. Sometimes they're really not essential and they get shifted and shifted. And 3 weeks later, you realize, well, it wasn't that important after all. I think that's all we can do. Mm. But the checking in with yourself, I think, is a good thing to do, but I wouldn't focus on the negative part of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I've really tried meditation as a way of also just calming myself down, because when I get very busy and very stressed, that's when I get a migraine, which I got yesterday. And I know if I could, that's a physiological thing. Something happens and the stress causes whatever happens to cause the migraine. So if I could calm that down on a more regular basis, I'd get less migraines and less feeling depressed, because I sometimes do feel really, really depressed if I get too stressed. When I try it, honestly, it's like a joke. It's like what you would do I sit there and my brain just starts going. And I have this thing where my brain goes on a loop. So it just gets stuck on something and it just goes round and round and round. And then I'm like, okay, you're meditating. You can't think about that. Calm down. Round and round and round. And I listened to this one guy on YouTube, and he said, don't think of it as like, you don't have to do a chant. You don't have to, just sit and listen to your brain. So I thought, oh, that sounds, I can do that, just sit and listen to my brain. But then I'm fully engaged with what he's saying to me.
Then you want to get up and get a piece of paper and a pen and write it all down, don't you?
Exactly. Or think, oh, this is rubbish, I'm not enjoying this, I'm gonna get up and do something. No, I realize I have not. I did once go to, with my friend a few years ago, we went to a Buddhist meditation, and it was really funny because it was in a very industrial part of Bradford, which is not an attractive place to go to. And in an underground church hall type building where next door some ladies were doing Pilates or something. Well, it was something more energetic, like Zumba. So you could hear them going, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. And then we had this lady in an orange robe, a bald-headed, some kind of monk. But she did the meditation and it was amazing. We just sat quietly while she talked. And I felt this experience in my head where there were no thoughts in it. And it was like it was expanding and expanding and expanding. And all of the things I'd been worried about, I could see were teeny, teeny, tiny. Yeah. And there was all this bigness. But I never went back. And I think it's setting and everything just put me off going back. But so I think I need someone else maybe to do the guided.
There are some quite good audios on YouTube. Do you not listen to those sometimes? Maybe I'll lie down and listen. You just end up in that lovely in between conscious, unconscious, sleep, awake space.
I've done
it. It's my happiest place to be. That. Yeah. I don't mind whether it's waking up or falling asleep, but that transition space, I love that, because that's when, as you say, I don't know, things not always get put in perspective in the right way, particularly in the evenings. I find in the evenings things blow up a little bit in the wrong way, like things seem much, but in the morning
You know, yeah, in the middle of the night is my bad time. Yeah. If I wake up and I can't get back to sleep, the middle of the night is definitely my bad time, where things always seem way worse than they are when you wake up.
But if you know that now, do you not have a way of like holding those off, like writing them all on a bit of paper and leaving it on the kitchen table and thinking that you'll deal with it in the morning? And then you look at it in the morning and you think, what the hell was I, what?
I haven't found a way. However, I have found a way to fall asleep that overcomes it, which a friend at college's brother told me once, and it works a treat. If you can't sleep, find a point in the room to stare at and stare at it and don't let your eyes close and just force yourself to stare at it. And very, very quickly, you feel your eyes trying to close and you go, no, I'm just going to keep staring at this point. And then the next thing you know, it's morning. It really works a treat. It works for me anyway.
I'll have to try that. Free tip. I'll have to try that. I tend to do the thing of just lying and almost like doing a body scan from your toes upwards, contracting your muscles and then letting everything relax. And then you just let it relax even further. And I, that does the same for me. I usually get to about my hips and I'm just like, it's morning. It's done. But from 4 a.m. I'm a bit bored of looking at we've got one of those clocks that projects the time onto the ceiling. And I can just wake up. I just wake up now and I know what time is. It's 2:10, isn't it? Yeah.
See, this is what really annoys me about me. I know that feeling. And when I came down to London the time before I saw you, when I went to the Tracy Emin exhibition, there was a whole room in her exhibition which had giant photographs of her 3 o'clock in the morning when she couldn't sleep, and you just went around the room and there were these amazing, like, not flattering, you know, sometimes all different 90s pajama tops, t-shirts, one where her boob had come out a bit but it wasn't a glamour shot, one where she had facial surgery so she had stitches, and there's just all these massive, way more than life-size photos of her at that time in the morning having insomnia. Now, I didn't think of that. Not that anyone would want to see pictures of me with insomnia, but what a brilliant thing to think. Oh, I'm always doing this. I'm going to photograph it, document it, and make it into part. I don't know if when she started it, she knew she'd make it into part of an exhibition. It was so moving to stand there because I felt like, oh, I know just what this feels like. Like, I'm having that feeling now.
But that's what I love about all of this. And it doesn't matter, does it? It really doesn't matter whether it's art or writing or books, or there was something else in the newspaper about an artist who, when they're in lockdown, they've been redrawing little watercolors of the front and back of every album that they had on a CD, including one where they'd had an argument with their brother or something, and he'd scrawled "I hate you" over the front of the album, and then when they'd made up afterwards, on the back of the CD case he'd written "I love you," and then they've done all these watercolors of them. And you know, but it's the same thing, isn't it? It's it can be the smallest little thing, and we just have to have that nudge to follow it through. And I think I in particular, I don't know, I think there are all things that we just need to learn about ourselves or learn to manage better. And my husband was reading the Alistair Campbell article and he said, but it's a bit depressing, isn't it? When he says, you know, I think this is going to be a thing that I'm going to have to manage for the rest of my life and understand about myself. And I said, I don't think that I find that depressing. I think it's just, that's what we're doing all the time, isn't it? That's what being human is, that's what growing up is, that's what, you know, we're learning about our personalities and how we react to things and how sometimes we try and do better and sometimes we manage it and sometimes we don't. That has a different category. He's called it depression, but it's the same thing that we're doing every day with everyone around us and with our art and everything.
Last week when you talked about your school reports, and I forgot to look for mine, I was having a conversation with a friend about school, and she was saying, but didn't you, you know, really enjoy it? And didn't you? And I was saying, no, absolutely hated it. For me, secondary school until the age of 16, when it got okay. But between 11 and 16, it felt like Lord of the Flies to me. I'm not kidding. It was awful. And I remembered that I was so out of sorts and so scared of everyone and so shy, just so like, what is going on? I can't cope with this. That the only way I knew how to cope with it was to become sullen, difficult, and make friends by being not bad, because I was never bad, but make friends by being, oh, I'm too cool to care about lessons. I just sit at the back and flick things at my friends and we all giggle, and made friends that way. But I remember it was painful. And my best friend, who I met when I was 15 at school, she said, when I first met you, you were terrifying. I was so scared of you. And she was quite a good girl. And I know I was terrified the entire time. But it's only now, looking back on it, that I've been able to put it into context and realize why I acted that way. I know now that I acted that way because I was too incapable. I didn't think me as me could get friends or be or fit in, but me as sullen and difficult, I could fit in. And that's the kind of thing that you realize as you get older, you start learning things about yourself. If I could go back now, none of that, I wouldn't think any of that. I'd be told to feel totally differently and behave totally differently. But at any stage of our lives, we can only behave with the knowledge we've got.
Yeah.
At that point. And the beauty of getting older, besides the creaking joints and the needing to get up in the night to go to the bathroom more often, the beauty of it is you start to know yourself better. You start to be able to observe when you are doing those things.
I agree with you entirely. And I think the other beauty is what you brought up before, which is about how you look back at photos and videos of yourself when you were, 26, 27 and think, wow. Mm. And that's still going to happen. Yet another book. Shall I find it? Let me find it. Hang on a second. See, it's brilliant. It's got this beautiful thing about section on architecture, about how Aleppo is being restored. It's just all really nicely uplifting. Okay, this is another book. I have no idea who this person is. Like, why would I be interested in this? Apart from I started reading it and I was interested. So Andrew O'Hagan, do you know him? Author? No, yeah. Never heard of him. Anyway, new novel, Mayflies, is an elegy to a teenage friend who died 2 years ago. And he was talking about, growing up, working class, spirit of post-punk, and how your friends were people who, they were your friends because you were at the same bus stop queuing to go to the record shop to buy the same record. And it's just like, you read things like that, and it makes you think about maybe the attitude that you had back then compared to the attitude that you have as an adult, where you've got to be more responsible and like do all of the things. I don't know. I don't know whether I'm just kind of feeling a bit more stuff it. I just want to do what I want to do. Do what I want to do.
I think doing what we want to do sounds like a really good way to live.
What stops you doing it?
Well, we can talk about that in What's Inspired.
Can we?
Phil stops me doing it, but you'll understand when I tell you what it is.
I think what stops me doing it is all the little bitty things that always seem to have to be done first.
Also, I think with you, similar to me, it's a sense of, I don't know if it's people pleasing in our case or what it is, but a sense of duty, responsibility to other people. So I'll think if, when this space opens up in my calendar, I know I'll start thinking I could do something more in my membership to help people more. I could create a mini course on such a thing. I could do all these things which are about other people.
Mm.
And I know that's going to happen. And I just really have to. That's what stops me, is I'm always busy. And I used to say I was too busy in my other business. And now, lo and behold, I'm too busy in this one. Mm. So there's one common denominator between those two things, and it's me. Mm. So I must be making myself too busy. So I need to just, that's what stops me a lot of the time, is myself.
I think the real thing, though, is perhaps that we're scared about what we might uncover and what we might turn into if we did that. Like, you're worried that, oh, I'm worried that if I did that, I would turn into a completely selfish person who really didn't care about anybody else at all. Or I'm really worried that if I did the kind of art that in my mind, like, wouldn't it be nice sometimes if you could visualize a painting in your mind and kind of press a button and it came out the other end on the canvas like that? Because what you create is never what I imagine I'm going to create. It's always something different. And that, of course, is the joy of it. Because if it was that easy, you imagine it, you press a button, it comes out like a printer, it wouldn't be fun. But the point is, if I create the kind of paintings that currently I'm imagining would be really fun to create, would be really like selfishly exciting, me, fuck it, I don't care, this is how I want to work, this is what I want to create. What if they're really, really, really bad? And like nobody likes them, including me. And does that even matter?
Yeah.
Maybe it doesn't. And maybe that's, you know, I don't know. It's kind of exciting, but it's also...
Like, what if I finish this TED Chew series? What if I really finish a load of paintings and then either I can't think of a way to show them or any way to get anybody to know about them, or I do get people to know about them and everyone goes, yeah, I really don't like them. That is a fear that's a fear that beginners have. And so you're going back to, in a way, a beginnery stage because you're thinking about starting something different. And that's what stops so many beginners. That's the block. It's not going to stop you, but it's the block that stops a lot of people from even picking up a paintbrush. What if it's rubbish? What if I'm no good? What if it turns out I'm a fraud? What if I have no talent? But you know now from enough times of doing it that that's not the case. Like, even if it was the case, even if you created this giant fun series of work and it wasn't what you imagined and everyone went, I liked what you were doing before better, you still got the security and knowledge that, yeah, but I can do all that other stuff that people love. So this one's just for me. Does that not make it feel any better?
It does make it feel any better, but I wouldn't want to go backwards. That's the point. And I think it's a bit more than that. It's a bit like it's kind of easier to be on a cycle where we're all evolving things all the time, right? But where you're evolving your work gently. And I just think maybe this whole last few month stretch, like we have been through so many unusual, strange, emotional, weird ups and downs. And maybe I've just got to the stage where I just, you know, like the go-karting, or I just got this craving for something that's a bit more extreme. And like when you're really thirsty and all you want is a really big glass of water, you just want something that's like that. And I've just got to work out what I need to make available for myself for that to happen. So I've got bigger canvases, I've got one big loose one on the floor. I'm having an endless debate with myself about whether I want to start using house paint or not. And then I think I'm just overthinking it.
Yeah, definitely overthinking it. Because you could start using it and see if you like it and then stop using it if you don't.
And all I've got to do is go and make things available to start that off. So in terms of making things available, I'll tell you what I did do. I went to the studio this week and I had to pick up the paintings for the cow shed. And I also had to go and yesterday they arrived and the building manager had taken them in, trestle tables. I did order some trestle tables before and all my family have used them for different things. They're like one's in my son's room, one somewhere else that my husband's using for work. So I've had to order some more because just in this spirit of keeping things open, doing what feels good, one of the things that I had was to have workshops in this flipping studio space. I've got this big studio space, and one of the reasons that I'm having it and paying for it each month is so that I could do workshops with other people in person. And the practicalities of how that has happened has just been so blocked, and obviously it hasn't been possible, but I just thought it's never going to happen if I don't do at least that first step of having getting those tables ready. So that's now done. And that now feels that I am freed up so that if one day I have an entrepreneurial fart or brain spark or whatever you want to call it, one or the other, could be good, could be bad, at least I'm kind of, I could act on it now. You know, I can do something. Yep. I can say, hey, do you know what, guys? I'm going to do this. It's next Friday. Who wants to come? Which is kind of the way, that's my point, is that's the way I want to feel for the next part of this year.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, it's on Friday. Who wants to come? I'm going to do these paintings. Hey, who wants to do it?
Yeah.
I've never been like that before.
So it sounds like what you're saying is the whole lockdown period and the whole weirdness of it has been like a, it feels like a birthing period for something new. And now it's kind of erupting out of you, like it's going to erupt.
Yeah, or it won't, or it'll die in this very quiet little simper. But I just think it has to, doesn't it?
I think it's like the way it's made some people rush to buy a house in Cornwall and retire early and things. Mm. It's made people, this whole time has made people reevaluate, hasn't it? Or think, yeah, what's important, or what do I want out of my life if it's going to get, if it's could be upended so quickly and everything I was planning for could get changed. Yeah. How do I actually want to live whatever time I've got? It's brought things into focus for people, I think. And that's the part I think I missed, just because I was so busy that I didn't get the lockdown weird experience that I'm probably going to get in the next few months.
Oh, we'll have to keep tabs on it then, won't we, for you?
Yeah.
Well, not sure how much all of that is. I mean, it is relevant to making art in the sense that it's always tied in, isn't it? So
I think it's really interesting, all of it. And we will not know for many decades
exactly
what really this all meant and how it affected people and how it affected society and all of that.
And we don't have any choice in that. That's the thing. We don't have any choice in that. No. I think the only thing is just trying to tune in. Like, and as you say, I don't think it is, it's not meditation or anything for everybody. Or checking in on your Alistair Campbell scale, but something along those lines. I don't know, it's the only thing we can do, isn't it? All right, so what's inspired you, or what have you enjoyed this week? I've kind of done mine, and if anybody's interested, the title of that Annie Nightingale book is Hey, Hi, Hello, which is quite a nice little thing, isn't it? So I'll put the list of all of the books that I've referenced in the show notes. But what about you then? What have you inspired or enjoyed this week?
Right. I'm going to keep the location of this secret. I'm not going to announce it on the podcast because there are going to be people listening who might go snap this up. And I haven't finished talking to Mr. Phil about this yet. No, it's not anything that serious. It's my imagining. So, you know, I told you that my hobby is to go on Rightmove and imagine other lives.
Yeah. Like,
my little hobby that I do at night, and I just go and look at houses, and I never really see one that is as nice as what I've got. I always think, yeah, but it ain't got that. Yeah, it ain't got that. Anyway, I saw this one, and it's remote. I'll say that. It's remote, and it's in Britain. And it's like a four-bedroom, decent-sized four-bedroom house. Average, nice-looking house. Nothing that special. But, Alice, when you look at it, it was previously owned by, because one of my coaches Googled this and found out, people who were creative is what I'll say. It was owned by people who were creative and successful creatives. And in the 80s, they retired, or they moved to this place to set up an art retreat workshop type venue. And so it has, imagine a decent sized four bedroom house, three bathrooms, kitchen, two reception rooms, that much space again in workshop and studio space. It is enormous. And
you buy it and then we can all come and use it.
Well, so I was telling the coaches on my course, and they were like, oh, I think you need studio assistants and people to potter around and help, and we could move too. Oh, it's just amazing. But it says, it's got these things in the description about needs work or whatever. And so I said to Phil, you know, I've seen this. Have you seen it? Just have a look. And he was like, oh, yeah, you know, it looks great. And then he kind of wandered off and I was like, yeah, that wasn't the reaction I was hoping for. So I need to go in again with a bit more.
Bit more gusto.
Yeah, but seriously, it isn't a place that I think we would consider.
Not quite right.
So it's more what inspired me about it. One of the coaches said to me, yeah, it's probably not practical, but it stirs the dream pot a little bit. And I love that phrase.
Yes,
it exactly. Kind of makes you think, oh, yeah, but what if somewhere more practical than that? What if, you know, I could picture workshops and retreats and things? Not even.
And that's how these things kind of start, I think. If you just open up the door to them a little bit, you know, it might be that something else comes along that doesn't involve you having to move, but has access to a similar space like that.
Exactly.
You know, from where you are now. It's funny, I'm starting to get house itchy feet. We've been in this house now for coming up to 17 years.
Right.
And I'm starting to get itchy feet.
Like
it can't happen yet. It can't happen for another 3 years, I think.
Yeah.
But I just want to live somewhere different. Different kind of building. And I saw somebody recently who'd moved and I just thought, ooh.
Yeah, jealous.
Ooh, yeah.
Of course, you'll remember that when you're in the middle a few years from now of trying to pack everything up and then you've got to sort the place out at the other end.
I did do that yesterday. I was sitting in this room and I was thinking, God, can you imagine with all of these books, great heavy art books and materials and oh God.
Yeah, that's the part that it kind of brings you back to thinking.
Don't think about that when you're dreaming. Don't think about that part when you're dreaming.
That's what Right Move is for. It's like the imaginary. And the other thing is, because I remember the house we live in now, I found the listing for it and it said something about and enjoy al fresco dining on the patio on a nice summer night. And I was like, yeah, if you can get through the midges.
Yeah, in Yorkshire. Like, how often have you done that?
Never, because on a nice night our garden is swarmed by midges. I'm not kidding. You can't sit out there without being eaten alive. So I was just chuckling to myself that al fresco dining. No.
When was that? That was estate agent speak circa when did you buy it?
That was the so we bought it 7 years ago.
Okay.
It's in the listing from 7 years ago.
Not that I think estate agent speak has changed.
No, it's the same everywhere. And that's what worried me about this house I saw, because it did say something about, although modernization is required, you know, da 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 da. And I was like, wow, if you actually mention it, then it's got to be fairly bad.
It needs a lot. It needs a lot. Oh, God, it's good to dream, though. It's good to dream. Okay, so not very practical then this week. Do you think would you like to have more practical episodes coming up? If you want to give us some ideas about what to talk about next, we have got the 100th episode coming up, not imminently. We've got a little bit of time to plan for it. So we're starting to have some ideas for what we can do for that. But if you've got any practical questions, I think things are going to change. I know that the summer for me is always weird because I'm never in touch. Even on a normal year, I'm never in touch with work. So I think the nature of just the conversation will change a bit as we start to get back into studio working life a little bit more. But if anybody's out there with a question, do let us know. You can send us a DM on Instagram. So you can find Louise on Instagram at LouiseFletcher_art, or I'm at Alice Sheridan Studio, and come over and see what we're doing on there. Other than that, we will love you and leave you for this week, and we will see you again next time. Bye-bye.
Bye. They're cutting the grass near us and it's just... makes Phil sneeze as if he sneezes louder than anyone I've ever heard.
I hand cooked her chicken and was offering it to her, you know, morsel by morsel with my own fair fingers, and she wasn't eating it. That's how you really know a dog's not well, don't you? You know how good it makes you feel when you get your hair cut?
Yeah.
It's true for her too. She comes out brightly.
Yeah, they like it. And he gets a little bow tie. He gets a little coloured bow tie on his collar when he's had a bath. So it looks really handsome for a few days.
All right. Dogs.